Hello, everyone. Thank you. Hi. So, welcome to one of the most fun events of the NSAR meeting. This is the NSAR Awards Ceremony, and I'm very pleased to be hosting the event. I want to remind everyone to please silence your mobile phones so that we don't have them going off in the middle of someone's award speech, which we wouldn't want to have happen. And I would like to begin by asking those in the audience to please stand if you have received a Student of Travel Award, a Diversity Award, a Diversity Poster Award, a Professional from Low-Income Countries Award, or an Early Career Workshop Award. Please stand so we can recognize you. Congratulations. And now I am going to turn it over to Matt Lerner, who is the chair of the awards committee. And I also want to thank him for all of your hard work over the year. So, Matt.
Thank you, Jerry, and thank you all for coming to this important event to honor some of the brightest young minds in autism research today. It really is incredibly impressive and intimidating to read the work of these young scholars. Everyone's getting better and better every year, and it's really quite wonderful. I want to take, first of all, a moment to thank the other members of the awards committee, Matt Moscone, Lucina Uden, Gabriel Dichter, and Svan Standers for committing a lot of time in a very short window of time to make these selections. It was not easy. So we'll dive right in, and first we're gonna go through the Young Investigator Award. So there are two recipients of this award, and this is given for the best biological and or clinical empirical research paper published in 2016 by an investigator MD or PhD who has received their degree within the last 7 years. Incredibly competitive work published in the very top journals in the field. The two papers of reference that we have here are actually listed on page 15 in your program book, published respectively in Molecular Psychiatry and the Journal of Abnormal Psychology by two wonderful, bright, rising stars in our field who we'd like to invite up to the stage now. This is Dr. Lior Brimberg and Dr. Abigail Dickinson. Please give them a round of applause. Again, thank you, Lior and Abigail, for your incredible work. Next, we are going to have the winners for the Dissertation Award. So dissertations are given annually to active scientists and clinicians in training in all areas of autism research. They're for the best basic science dissertation and or the best clinical or behavioral dissertation in autism accepted by a university just this past year. So the work that we have here has just been is fresh out. Some of it is published already. Some of it is on its way. But it's really remarkable what these folks have been able to get done just during the course of receiving their dissertation. Some of it is work that would be tenurable in some contexts already. So really remarkable. We're doing something a little bit different. Starting last year, we're continuing this year. We're allowing the dissertation award winners, giving them 5 minutes each to summarize their dissertation. And I believe probably the hardest part of this whole process, my guess, is trying to take an entire dissertation and summarize it in 5 minutes. I'm very excited, though, to give you all a chance to get a taste of what we on the committee got a chance to indulge in a bit. So the first dissertation award is going to Dr. Dorothea Flores on her dissertation on asymmetry in autism, brain structure, function, and behavior. Let's give her a round of applause.
Thanks so much to Matt Lerner and the awards committee. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to present some of my work here today. So the topic of my PhD thesis was hemispheric lateralization and asymmetry in autism across brain structure, function, and behavior. Okay. So first of all, what does hemispheric lateralization very broadly refer to? So the two hemispheres of our brain look very much alike, but they're actually quite different, both in terms of structure and function from each other. So some functions are more strongly represented in the left hemisphere, such as language and motor functions, and some functions are more strongly represented in the right hemisphere, such as visuospatial functions. And as we know, these left hemisphere functions are more among those functions that present an area of weakness in autism, whereas these right hemisphere functions are more enhanced in autism. So this observation has led research to study the concept of atypical hemispheric lateralization in autism, mostly in the language domain today. So the overarching goal of my thesis was to characterize hemispheric lateralization in autism across different imaging modalities such as brain structure and function, and the behavioral measures such as handedness. I also explored previously unaddressed questions such as whether different language-related subtypes within autism would be related to different patterns of hemispheric lateralization, and whether other lateralized functional domains beyond language would show atypical hemispheric lateralization. I also had the opportunity to address questions related to age, sex, and symptom correlations, but in interest of time, I will not talk about this today. So given the role of language in lateralization and autism, I divided my sample into those individuals with autism who had early language delay and those who didn't, and compared them to neurotypical controls. In the first step, I looked at handedness as a behavioral marker of lateralization and found that individuals with autism were more left or non-right-handed compared to typical controls, and this pattern was most pronounced in those individuals who also had a history of early language delay. In the next step, I also looked at brain structure in an independent adult sample, and I found that individuals with autism showed reductions in leftward asymmetry in a posterior auditory region, and this again was most pronounced in those individuals with a history of early language delay. In a third independent child sample, I used resting state fMRI data, and I examined posterior anterior language network connectivity and found reversed rightward lateralization in children with autism. And again, the stepwise pattern presented as a function of early language delay. So across three different modalities, I found that different patterns of hemispheric lateralization could differentiate between different language profiles on the autism spectrum. In the same resting state sample, I also investigated different functional domains beyond language and found that children with autism showed reversed rightward lateralization in an intrinsic functional motor network, and the stronger this rightward asymmetry was, the more deficit they also showed in gross motor skills. So in conclusion, atypical hemispheric specialization in autism is present across different imaging and behavioral modalities. It is not restricted to the language domain, but also present in other functional lateralized domains such as motor functioning, for example, and it can potentially serve as a stratifying biomarker as it differentiates between different symptom profiles within autism. I would like to thank my supervisors, mentors, and advisors in Cambridge, especially Simon Baron-Cohen, John Suckling, and Mengxuan Lai. Thanks so much for your tremendous support and guidance. I would like to thank Stuart Mostofsky, who welcomed me for 3 months to work with them at Johns Hopkins, at Kennedy Krieger Institute, and of course all volunteer families and participants. And thanks to you for your attention.
Thank you, Dorothea. And our next dissertation award, listed up here now, goes to Dr. Alexandra Hofdahl, who's going to be talking to us about how context matters and factors affecting assessment of autism features. Let's give her a round of applause.
Thanks to all of you for being here and to the INSAR Awards Committee. I'm so honored to receive this award and to have the opportunity to present my dissertation work. There are many challenges in autism assessment, especially because we're seeing patients and research participants across a wide range of ages and ability levels and varying in emotional behavioral problems such as anxiety, hyperactivity, and mood problems. Another challenge is integrating information from different sources, such as parent description and clinician observation, as the information we get from these sources can be discrepant. In spite of these challenges, there's still limited information about how child and informant characteristics affect instruments assessing ASD. And this was the focus of my dissertation, which consisted of three studies. The first study assessed how child characteristics affected the utility of the child behavior checklist, or the CBCL, as a screener for ASD. So while the CBCL was designed to measure general emotional and behavioral problems, CBCL scales are increasingly being used to measure, to screen for children in general psychiatric settings, to make decisions about whom to refer for further ASD assessment. As shown here, for the best CBCL scale, children who had high levels of emotional and behavioral problems, or EBP, were likely to meet the ASD screening cutoff, regardless of whether they had ASD or not. On the other hand, children with ASD who had low behavior problems were likely to be missed. Using different cutoffs depending on the level of EBP resulted in much better accuracy for ASD, but the CBCL scale still remained poor in sensitivity in children with low EBP. The second study explored how child characteristics affected three assessment instruments for ASD: the SRS, a parent questionnaire, the ADIR, a parent interview, and the ADAS-2, a clinician observational assessment. So specificity differed to a large degree by level of cognitive ability for the SRS and the ADIR, but not the ADAS. And the same pattern was found for parent-rated emotional and behavioral problems. But when defining EBP by clinician observation, specificity of all three instruments were affected. The result of this study also indicated that it may be possible to improve the instrument's accuracy for ASD by adjusting for level of cognitive ability and EBP. As shown here, for the distribution of SRS scores in children with ASD in red and children with other disorders in blue, the SRS scores did not distinguish between children with ASD and low EBP and children without ASD and high EBP. But when taking this factor into account by comparing only children with low EBP and only children with high EBP, the scores had very similar accuracy for ASD across these groupings. The third study addressed the fact that the ADIR and ADAS have almost exclusively been validated in samples referred to specialized ASD clinics, in which most children are referred because their parents are concerned about ASD. Still, these instruments are used widely in other settings, such as in general developmental and psychiatric clinics, where children are not necessarily referred because their parents are concerned about ASD. So this study looked at whether parent concern about ASD affected the ability of the instruments to identify young children with ASD, using a sample of almost 700 three-year-olds from the population-based Norwegian mother and child cohort study. So the ADAS cutoffs performed similarly across the groups with and without parent concern about ASD. The ADIR cutoffs had different sensitivity in the two groups and missed nearly half of the toddlers with AEC whose parents did not have a specific concern about AEC. When using different ADIR cutoffs, depending on whether parents were concerned about AEC or not, the ADIR's ability to identify toddlers with AEC improved, and scores from both the ADIR and the ADOS contributed additively to predicting AEC diagnosis. So taken together, the results demonstrate that assessment instruments for AEC can perform very differently depending on child characteristics and whether parents are concerned about AEC or not. So therefore, consideration of these child and informant characteristics is important when interpreting scores from the instruments. The findings also indicate that the instrument's accuracy for AEC can be improved by accounting for these characteristics, and future studies can examine the utility of different ways of accomplishing this. I want to especially thank my mentors, Summer Bishop and Kathy Lord, who've been crucial to my development as a researcher and clinician. I also want to thank my other collaborators in the US, UK, and Norway, and of course the participating families. Thank you.
And our final dissertation award goes to Dr. Lauren Schmidt, who will be talking to us about family studies of sensory motor disturbances in autism spectrum disorder. Congratulations, and come on up, Dr. Schmidt.
Thank you all so much. I'm really grateful to be here and very proud to receive this award. I'm excited to present all the data. So I'm glad one of the earlier dissertation awards were already talking about motor in autism, because whenever you think about autism spectrum disorder, that's not one of the ideas that generally comes to mind. So why are we studying autism or motor in autism spectrum disorder? Well, motor abnormalities are really common in autism spectrum disorder. Whether it's an impairment or a delay, we're seeing upwards of 85% of individuals with autism have some sort of motor disturbance. We also know that these motor abnormalities, especially compared to some more of those complex social communication ideas, can be spatially and temporally quantified using really simple paradigms that can be studied in younger individuals as well as individuals with relatively low IQs. Importantly, the brain systems that are underlying these motor deficits have been well-defined in non-human primate studies, so we really know what's going on in the brain, especially in the cerebellar brainstem, that have also been consistently implicated in autism. And lastly, these motor abnormalities are also present in unaffected family members of individuals with autism. This led us to do a study of family trios looking at individuals with autism and their two biological parents to determine the familiality of these motor disturbances. So we did two different studies. We used this manual motor testing, so it was a precision gripping test where they're using their thumb and their pointer finger to basically get that white bar up to that green bar line, and they're holding it steady there. And they're constantly getting visual feedback, which is a sensory dependent and cerebellar dependent mechanism where they're going to have to adjust their motor output based upon that visual stimulation. We're also using a visually guided saccade task where they're looking at a dot as it moves to the left and the right of the screen, and we want to see how accurate and how are they getting there, what's the speed, the duration of that eye movement. And this is a feed-forward dependent mechanism, again, that is based on that cerebellar area of the brain that we know is highly implicated in autism. So what did we find? Well, whenever we're looking at the variability of that precision gripping task, is we're seeing that as the motor demand is increased in those individuals with autism, it's getting harder for them to be reliable. They're kind of bouncing around all over the place, especially, again, at these larger targets when they're having to press with 45 or 85% of their maximum force. parents of individuals with autism are also showing a very similar pattern, that as you increase the amount of force they're having pressed, they're kind of going all over the place. They're not really able to use that visual feedback to update their motor output and really be consistent with it. So what do the eyes look like? Well, we're seeing that there's a high level of saccade air. They're missing the target. They're 2 degrees off from that target. And this is particularly, again, when you're putting increased motor demands on the system. Then the velocity, they have too fast of movements to get there, so they're unreliably getting to that target. Again, this is a cerebellar brainstem dependent mechanism. Parents show a little bit different of a pattern. Their saccade air, it's fairly normal. They're hitting to the target where they're supposed to be, but again, they're too fast. And so what does this say? Well, importantly, we also did these solar analyses, which is a variance component analysis that looks at what is the familiarity of these. Are these intercorrelated among family members? And sure enough, we're seeing that this motor variability of their hand movements and this velocity of their eye movements are highly familiar. 72% of the variance of these individuals with autism is directly related to their family membership, meaning because the parents basically have this motor error and velocity difference, the kids with autism also have this motor error and velocity difference. And so what does this tell us? It just suggests that there's some shared mechanism among the parents of individuals with autism and the individuals with autism themselves, something that is cerebellar mediated perhaps. They have this shared pathogenic mechanism. So I want to thank everyone on my own dissertation committee, everyone that I did this work with at UT Southwestern, and especially the families who participated in the studies. Thank you.
Okay. Again, really wonderful. Can you guys believe that they did these for their dissertation? Could have done that for my dissertation. So my final award that I will be presenting, and I'll be turning it over to Jerry, today is the Slifka-Ritvo Innovation in Autism Research Award. So the Alan B. Slifka Foundation promotes innovative research on autism spectrum disorders conducted by junior investigators. The goal of this award is to really accelerate truly novel, highly innovative, new either treatments or basic discoveries about autism that can improve the quality of life for people with autism. The foundation very generously provides one $25,000 one-year research award to an NSAR member. So it's supported a wide range of clinical research and basic research, but the goal is really to support truly promising junior investigators to pursue excellent research that's really out of the box and might give us genuine, high-impact, fascinating new findings that can take us in new directions. And I have to say that the award winner this year truly exemplifies both the high quality of that work, the incredible track record already as a junior investigator, as well as an idea that really, I think, blew all of our minds here on the committee. So I'm going to announce the winner in a moment, but also let you all know that as a condition of the award, in two NFARs from now, you'll be invited back to this stage to tell you about the wonderful results of the study that he will have done. So for the 2018 annual meeting of the International Society of Autism Research, right? Okay. In Montreal, Canada, we will be very excited to hear back from our winner from this year, who is Dr. Meng-Chuan Lai at the University of Toronto. His project is an imaging genomics investigation on sexual transmitted viruses. So let's give one final round of applause to our junior investigator award winners, education award winners, diversity award winners, students at the Ritvo. And I'd just like to encourage all of the young investigators in this audience or graduate students to apply for these awards. I know that these folks, their work is really intimidating, but they were all sitting where you were just a couple of years ago. So thank you all, and now I'm going to turn it over to Jerry for the rest of the ceremony.